Hi, today's April 1st, 2017. This is Comics News Podcast number 88. I'm Todd Gossard, my good friend Jay Stone, and Jay and I are going to do something I'm not sure we ever did before. It's kind of an unintended two-part discussion. So last week we discussed the recently released Marvel's Iron Fist on Netflix, and I thought we were kind of done talking about it, even though we hadn't finished a series at the time, and I still haven't finished it. And we plan to return to it maybe later, but I didn't expect us to return to it one week later. So, both Comics News Podcast 87 and 88 are about Iron Fist, so you're not hearing a repeat. Iron Fist has been universally panned by all the critics. And when I looked it up on Rotten Tomatoes, critics gave it a 17%. But the interesting thing is, regular people like us gave it 80%. So, there's a real divide between what the alleged experts believe and what the rest of the world believe. Gee, I don't remember. You know, I know you're a huge Iron Fist fan, but do you like the show itself? I don't know. Hard to say.
I like the show except for two things.
Okay.
To be honest. Well, three. One is common to all the Marvel Netflix shows. Dark. It takes too long to get to the story.
Okay. Yeah. Slow. Yep.
It's way too slow. I'm not as bad. I mean, it's nice to have it bright, but I think you don't like it that it's so dark. Super
visually dark.
I'm not as bothered by that because there were a lot of daylight scenes.
Okay.
There actually were a lot of daylight scenes.
That's true.
Other Marvel Netflix shows. Yeah, yeah. Iron Fist. But it's glacially slow, like most of the other Marvel Netflix shows. I don't like his hair or his beard. Danny Rand does not have curly hair.
Or a beard.
Or a beard. He's clean shaven. He has straight hair.
Yeah.
I just didn't understand why they made him have curly hair and a beard. I just don't get it. I don't think it added to the character. I don't think it... It didn't make any sense to me.
Right. And the beard is too well groomed to be explained away as he grew it because they had no shaving implements in Kowloon or whatever it's called, right?
Yeah, in Kowloon.
Yeah. So you can't explain and say they had no razors because that it's maintained. It'd be just a mass of hair otherwise.
Yes. I didn't understand the beard and I don't understand the curly hair. I mean, I tried to go with it, but it actually was a pet peeve of mine through the whole show. I didn't get it.
I take it you've watched the whole thing, all 13 episodes now.
Yes. After our last podcast.
Yep.
Like right after that, over the next few days, I've been watched the whole thing. I wanted to see what would happen. I said last time that this was the first Netflix series where I really wanted to see what would happen in the next episode.
Okay.
Even though it was glacially slow. Right. I actually wanted... Daredevil was really hard after the first episode. Jessica Jones was really hard. Even Luke Cage, it was hard for me to get into it. I feel like they stumbled a lot in the beginning for each one of the Netflix shows.
Mm-hmm.
I do think they stumbled for Iron Fist because it's somehow the way that the showrunners are running this, the whole TV group. They're just too. It's just they move it along too slowly.
Yeah.
So the first thing was it's too slow. But that's common to all of them.
Right.
Right.
So, let me get along a couple other things since you mentioned binging. So, the other piece of news that came out about Iron Fist this week is some data from this company called Seven Park Data, as reported by Variety, the entertainment magazine. And they found that Seven Park Data found that Iron Fist streams were much higher for the opening day than the other Marvel Netflix shows. So, in fact, it's higher than everything else. And it accounted for 14.6% of all Netflix streams on March 17th, the day it launched. So, what is that? 1 out of 8, more or less? 1 out of 7? Anyway, it's mm-hmm. a large number of people
mm-hmm.
streaming that on a single day. And that mm-hmm. number was higher than Stranger Things and Luke Cage, which is 12.8%, and Season 2 of Daredevil, 13.8%, and Orange is the New Black. So,
mm-hmm.
despite what the critics say, again, 17% on Rotten Tomatoes, there's something, like you said, there's something compelling about it. And I have to say, you know, I think I'm only on episode 5 right now. But it's compelling enough that unlike Jessica Jones, which I quit watching after episode 2, I think, or Daredevil season 2. I did watch all of season 1, but Daredevil season 2, I could not get past the first episode. I'm continuing to watch Iron Fist.
They should have a version called Iron Flicks. Because it's on Netflix. Yeah. That would be awesome.
But you know, so despite what the critics are saying, regular people like you and me are enjoying it much more than they are, apparently. And I'm not saying it's a great show. It's not. But it's better than, for me anyway, better than AKA Jessica Jones, better than season 2 of Daredevil. Not as good as Luke Cage, which I think is still the barometer, you know, the level to hold which other things in comparison.
Well, if you look at Luke Cage, because I just went back and I looked at the other Marvel Netflix shows.
Mm-hmm.
Luke Cage got 96% tomato.
Wow. And
83% popcorn.
Okay.
So, like, right now it's 17% tomato for Iron Fist.
Right.
And 80% popcorn, right? Right. But if you go to Jessica Jones got 93% tomatoes and 90% popcorn.
Wow.
Crazy, yeah. 93%. Isn't that crazy?
Even the 90% from the popcorn side, from the people side, is amazing to me. Maybe people...
And then the first series... he's good. He's actually really good. He's one of the better villains.
Well, you know, not only is he good, but he's Doctor Who. So, you know, Doctor Who fans, you know, like me,
yeah,
probably watch them just to watch David Tennant, because we enjoy watching him do his craft, and he's a good actor.
And then Daredevil, the first season of Daredevil, got 87% tomato and 95% popcorn.
Yeah.
So, but then it also had Vincent D'Onofrio.
Yeah. But so this one is the only Marvel Netflix show that has had such a disparity between what the critics say and what the real people say, right?
Yeah.
The others are reasonably close, you know, not identical, but reasonably close. Okay, so there's another article in Business Insider that says a week after the, you know, debut on March 17th, that people, this is Business Insider's headline, people are quickly losing interest in Iron Fist, a Netflix panned Marvel show. And they go on to say that, you know, compared to other shows, the drop from week 1 to week 2 is much higher than, you know, Daredevil and AKA Jessica Jones and things. I wonder, though, you know, given the 80% rating by real people on Rotten Tomatoes, if that's the case for the drop, or simply people finished watching all 13 episodes in 1 week.
Yeah, I wonder. I don't know how good of a... I mean, it's the thing is, I have a question, is that the source they're using isn't using actual data from Netflix.
No, because I don't think anybody
It's not Netflix. No. Yeah, Netflix doesn't provide that information.
Right.
Which, actually, I think is wrong for Netflix not to do.
Mm.
I think they do it as a business tactic, so no one really knows how well their series are doing or not.
Mm.
I think if they actually published ratings or streams or hits, like other like how you can find for other like websites, or how you get for like the TV ratings.
Right.
I think people may find that some things that are hits may not really be hits. Mm. They just tell you that they are, or they may not be as big of a hit as you might think.
Yeah.
What I thought was interesting is if you look at that graphic they had on the Business Insider.
Right.
Look at Daredevil and where it started.
Okay.
Is that Daredevil? See, I don't understand this. It says Marvel's Daredevil from March 15th. That must be the second season, right? Or is it the first season?
March 15th. When did it debut?
2016. Because okay. Jessica Jones has 2015. So this must be the second season.
Okay.
Right, so they have that graphic. There's a graphic on Business Insider article, and they have this chart, right? So Luke Cage is at the top, right?
Right.
Whatever that, what is 50? Right. Is that 55 million views? I don't understand what the numbers mean.
Yeah, I'm gonna guess that too. And just for folks who aren't clicking on the, haven't clicked on the link yet that I'll put in the show notes for this podcast. This data is from Parrot Analytics, so it's different from the other data. Yeah. That was from 7 whatever. Anyway,
7P Park or something.
Right.
So if you look at the data, right, when they premiere, right, you got 55 million, whatever that means, for right. Luke Cage, 47.8 million for Luke, Iron Fist,
right,
37.3 million for Jessica Jones,
right.
And this looks like Daredevil, looks like his mask,
right,
22.972 million.
Right.
But that's March 2016, so that must have been his second season, which you and I both agree wasn't as strong as the first one.
Right.
So, but if you look at it, he premieres high and then there's a drop, right?
Right.
But it's like you say, does that mean that people finish the whole show?
That's what I'm thinking. I mean, that's the only way to explain the Rotten Tomatoes rating to me, right?
Yeah. I mean, if, yeah, that makes sense to me. I never really think about drops. I don't know how that reflects whether or not something is successful or popular.
Well, I think that comes from the
small
movie,
drop or a big drop.
Yeah, I think that comes from the movie, you know, sales figures where, you know, you'll see a movie will pop, right? I mean, movies, you have to pop to number one. It'll never pop to number one these days. So pop to, you know, let's say, and they, and in the movie industry, they used the weekend dollars. So let's say, you know, a movie pops up and makes $100 million the first weekend, right? And then the second weekend, it makes $80 million, which you know, you expect it to drop, but that's good, right? You've only lost 20%. But if it drops to $10 million after first weekend, that's a dud, right? It sort of just popped up there because of initial interest, but people weren't going back for second viewing and they weren't telling their friends who are now going for the second weekend. And so the indication is that this drop is an indication of the basic popularity of something, you know, whether it's a flash in a pan or if something that's staying power. So I think that they're trying to make that analogy for these you know, binge worthiness of a TV series.
But I guess I feel like what you were saying earlier, I don't know how that, see, a movie is like one crack, right? 2 hours, right?
Right.
Or whatever, right? Hour and a half, right?
Right.
3 hours for some movies that some movies don't even get off, right? But
right.
A TV is different. I mean, it's a series of episodes. So why would a drop after a week or whatever this time period is supposed to illustrate have any indication of its popularity? Because especially if it's like all released at one time,
right?
It's so not like my regular network where right. Over time, yeah.
So my belief, and that's all it is, right? Or my interpretation, I guess I should say, is that I assume what it's trying to indicate is that assuming that people don't watch an entire series in the first week of release, the second week numbers indicates people still following it who have, you know, presumably not finished it. Now, in this case, with only 13 episodes, it's possible to watch it. You know, you can watch two a day and finish it before week two, right? So
Well, I look at it like this. I did that with Stranger Things. When Stranger Things came out and I heard about it and I started watching one, I literally couldn't stop. That was, for me, a Netflix show. That is the best Netflix show I've ever seen.
Wow.
And I don't watch too many of them because I started, okay, all House of Cards fans out there, I don't get super mad. I started with House of Cards, but I can't make it through.
Yeah.
I couldn't make it through after episode 5. I just couldn't.
Me too, by the
way. I was like, oh. And it's like, or it's like Orange is the New Black. I tried. I couldn't get past the first episode, you know?
Yeah.
And I just wasn't engaged in the story. I was like, I don't know if I want to watch this, the whole 13 episodes, right?
Right.
So, or whatever it was that season. But Stranger Things,
I felt that way about
engaged.
And I felt that way about AKA Jessica Jones in season 2 of Daredevil. So I know exactly what you mean. I watched it. I tried it, you know, gave it an effort because I'm a Marvel fan, but in the end, it just wasn't worth my time.
Yeah, I mean, it takes time. I mean, like, I stayed up super late watching Stranger Things.
Wow.
And to be honest, I'm a big... Okay, everyone, I'm biased. I love Iron Fist.
Yep.
I just watched it as long as I could until I fell asleep. Because I love the character. I was like, man,
despite the flaws.
I gotta go to work.
Despite the flaws,
every time I hate his hair, I really hated the hair. Oh, there's three things, right? Slow, super slow.
Yeah.
Don't like the hair and the beard.
Hair.
And Colleen Lane.
Yeah.
I just couldn't. I like the casting of everyone, but yeah. Colleen Wing. I didn't see her in Game of Thrones, so I don't know how good or bad she is, yeah. but there's something... At first, she seemed pretty good, and then as the series went on, there were a couple episodes where things just didn't... It's almost as if they edited it, and that there was something missing. It really was. I saw that some of the later episodes, I was like, what? Did this behavior change? And to be fair, it wasn't just her. It was also Danny Rand's character. Right. Kind of seemed... There were some scenes that just seemed like something is disjointed here. Like it got reshot or edited in a way that didn't make sense. So when you get to the later episodes, I don't remember which episode it was.
Yeah.
But it just kind of was like, huh?
Well, I think even in early episodes, it's like that for me. Basically, I don't like any of the casting. I'm trying to think of any of the casts that I think are cast correctly, and no.
I like the evil brother. I actually liked him.
What's his name?
I think Ward Meacham.
Yeah.
I like, out of all the characters in the show,
yeah,
I liked his story the most.
Interesting.
It's pathetic.
Yeah.
But it has his character is much more complex than any of the other characters in the show. I think Colleen Wing was miscast.
Yeah.
You know, that's my, something about it just didn't click.
Yeah.
You know,
it's like in Gotham, right? Who did we like? Which villain was it that we liked? The mob boss. Yeah.
Well, I forget the guy.
I know. It's a famous character in the Batman mythology, too, but I'm just blanking on it.
Doesn't look like him. Again, doesn't look anything like him.
Yeah.
But that actor did a good job.
He did, and it was a well-written character. You know. It was a compelling character. Even though there was a bad guy, it was a compelling character, one you kind of rooted for many times. So I can see that about Ward Meacham, I suppose. Although, you know, kind of the stereotypical slick back hair and everything. Again, with the hair thing, right? I just thought that was a little overdone.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. And his sister, Joy Meacham. I mean, that character is just written all over the place. It makes no sense. You know, she's drugging and putting him in a insane asylum one day, and then she's propping him up as the head of the Rand Corp the next day.
She's very conflicted.
Yeah.
She's very conflicted.
Yeah.
She has unresolved issues with him. She has unresolved issues with her brother.
Yeah.
Unresolved issues with her dad.
Yeah. Okay, so
she was from 90210, the new version of 90210.
So
she was silver.
So since we need to get you out of here in a couple of minutes, let me wrap it up by saying the things I don't like about it before we talk about the late great Bernie Wrightson, and that is the things I don't like about Iron Fist. Or are distracting me, I should say, that I have not already mentioned. The thing number one, the fight scenes. They are terrible. They're slow. They're not compelling. This is supposed to be like one of the best fighters in the world, right? Iron Fist.
Yes.
There's him. Yes. There's Shang-Chi. There's Captain America. Then the list gets pretty small. Then the list gets hard to add to. In terms of best,
of ordinary fighters. Human being people, right?
Yeah.
Of ordinary people.
Yeah, or near ordinary. You know, I guess Captain America's enhanced, but still, you know what I'm saying, right?
He's enhanced, but he isn't beyond a human capability.
Right. So
yeah, he's
so those guys are the best of the best ever, right?
Mm-hmm.
Danny Rand this version of Danny Rand Iron Fist. Personally, I think Jet Li could take him with one hand.
I didn't mind the fight scene so much because it was less gore.
Because of the what?
There was less gore. There was less blood.
Less gore? Okay, okay, I'm fine with that.
I appreciated that. I thought Daredevil was unnecessarily brutal.
Yeah, it was.
Same thing with Jessica Jones.
It was,
but not so much with Luke Cage. But I mean, Luke Cage is super, strong but, and unbreakable. Right?
Anybody who's watched Bruce Lee, Jet Li, mm-hmm. Jackie Chan, Sammo Hung,
mm-hmm.
Their fight scenes were works of art. They were fast. They were furious. They were not on a different series of movies, but they were entertaining. They're works of art. These fight scenes are like, yeah, they're okay. They're slow, by the way. So
the ones in the beginning aren't so good.
Yeah. Did it get better?
Yes.
Okay.
I think they get better. However, it's a style. I don't know. I appreciate different styles.
Yeah.
It's a style that's not that stylized. So the kind of the things that you, people that you talked about do really great fight scenes.
Yeah.
But they're highly stylized.
Well, how about this? And how about Sonny Chiba and Chuck Norris?
I don't remember Sonny Chiba. I remember Chuck Norris.
Yeah.
Chuck Norris fight scenes are good. They're gritty. The only thing with Chuck Norris scenes that I've seen, because I've seen so many of his films,
right?
He tends to do very similar choreography.
Yeah.
Right. He's always going to do certain kind of things, right?
Right. Right.
And when he does it really, really well, it's okay. But if you've seen like, I don't know how many Chuck Norris movies I've seen. I've seen a lot of them. After a while, it's like, okay, I know you're going to do that. I know you're going to whack the guys in the ear. He goes to certain moves. Wow. He has go-to moves. After a while, it's like it's not interesting anymore.
Yeah.
The one thing about him, though, is as a martial artist, he's incredibly controlled. He's the real deal. I mean, he was a karate champion.
Yeah.
Right? So they're working with an actor who doesn't have that kind of skill.
That's the thing, right?
But yes, that's the thing. He's an actor first. He doesn't have the skill. So in order for him to have that kind of stylization, he really would have needed to have trained and gotten a really good choreographer to provide that stylization.
Yeah.
But for some reason, the fight choreographer they chose had a very, the style of which that they've given to the choreography isn't, I would agree with you, isn't as what you would call very fast-paced and exciting.
Yeah, which is what I expected from Iron Fist. Also, I expected
it's very muted.
I also expected more kind of actual Iron Fist. You really don't see Iron Fist? You know what I'm saying? You don't see him use the power, right? There are a lot of times where he's getting beat up or whatever, and it's like, well, come on, just activate the Iron Fist. Come on, let's get it over with.
You do. They do explain it. They do explain it later on.
Okay.
In the later episodes, they do explain it, and it's like, but you know what? It in some ways, let's put it this way. In the comics, I always thought it was a cop-out the way he uses the Iron Fist. He can't do anything else because he's so tired, right?
Mm-mm.
And I always thought it's like the same thing with like Superman, right? He's too powerful. The Iron Fist is the unbreakable fist with so much power it can cut through anything, supposedly, right?
Right.
His internal chi is so enhanced, he dipped his hands in the heart of the dragon. Forget the guy's name. Forget the dragon's name, right?
Mm.
And that's how he gets the power of the Iron Fist. When you have something that's that powerful, right? It's almost like, well, he can beat anyone. He doesn't need to know really good martial arts, right? All he needs to do is, it's like a Superman level kind of thing, right? So
right.
They created a situation where it was a great concept, but if he's able to use it all the time, it doesn't give a good, compelling story because he can easily defeat anyone, right? And so they have to create these contrivances that make it difficult for him to use it. Otherwise, the fight would be over before it even began.
Well, given
right?
how bad
and
the
kind
choreography,
of the problem with
yeah,
the
but
power.
Given how bad the choreography is, a lot of times it should have been over before it began.
Yeah. I agree with you. It's not the most exciting choreography, but I enjoyed it.
Okay. Okay, I know you got to get out the door in a couple of minutes, so let's sign off
on
this and just say a few words about Bernie Wrightson, one of, I think, your favorite artists and definitely one of mine.
Yes, Bernie writes in horror, mostly horror, known for horror, but some superhero, did some commercial work, did a lot of work for movies. He worked on he did conceptual art for Ghostbusters, The Faculty, Galaxy Quest, Spider-Man, Land of the Dead, The Mist. He's worked for, I don't know, seemed like every publisher.
Yeah.
And he was around for a really long time. I mean, he's friends with, you know, he used to live with Alan Milgram, Howard Chaykin, Walter Simonson. He used to live with, when he created the studio. I don't know who Jeffrey Catherine Jones is, but I know Michael Kaluta.
Mm-hmm. One of my favorites.
Oh, amazing. He did The Shadow, yeah?
He did.
He did a version of The Shadow, one of my favorite characters. Barry Windsor Smith. Amazing.
Yep. Conan the Barbarian.
Just like some of the, I mean, Bernie Wrightson, he was one of the greats. And I copied something from his Wikipedia when he died, right? People like Joss Whedon, Neil Gaiman, Guillermo del Toro, Walter Simonson, Mike Mignola, they all had tributes to him.
Right. We should mention that Bernie Wrightson passed away on March 18th at the age of 68, which is why we're kind of doing a little mini memorial for him before J.S.
Yeah, he was the door. He was a co-creator of The Swamp Thing.
Yep, classic.
I mean, how many people can say, you know, Swamp Thing was, what, the 60s or something? Early 70s?
70s, I think.
Early 70s, a horror character that's still around, that's still thriving. I mean, Swamp Thing is one of the best characters that was ever written, I mean, for horror. I mean, he won so many awards over the years. He did his great epic was Frankenstein.
Yep.
They did a book of Frankenstein, and then he illustrated he had their panels in that book. It was Mary Shelley's words, his art. And if you can go onto his website, I think it's BernieWrightson.com, and you can look at the art and just enjoy it. His detail was unbelievable. And his use of chiaroscuro, you know, light and dark,
mm-hmm.
so fit horror and had so much emotion to it. I wouldn't say he's a realist, but his level of detail was just amazing. Yeah, he was one of the greats. I really love his work. I love anything Bernie Wrightson does.
Yeah, and I have to say, before we sign off, because I know Joy has to leave like 2 minutes ago.
I have a few more minutes.
Oh, okay, one of the things even though he's best known for his horror stuff, as Jay mentioned, Swamp Thing and Frankenstein, a few others, my favorite were the few times that I saw him do Batman. Because his version of Batman was, I mean, everybody's version of Batman is a little different. You know, there's kind of the short ear Batman from the 1960s, and there's the Neil Adams, you know, kind of super realistic Batman from the late 60s. You know, and there's the Gene Colan version of Batman, which kind of looks like Daredevil because he did both of them. But Bernie Wrightson's Batman was, you know, he had these super long bat ears. I mean, they were like a foot long, I think, when you look at some of the drawings he did. And, you know, in the original Batman, he says he chose the mantle of the bat because it would strike fear in the hearts of criminals. And quite frankly, if you saw the Bernie Wrightson version of Batman appear in the dark in front of you, you would have a heart attack.
It was scary.
Yeah.
It was horrific, you know?
Yeah. And it was wonderful.
It was like he was a demon.
Yeah. Exactly.
Right? I mean, it was. I agree with you. His version of Batman is, there are different people do all different takes, like you said, and they all have their place, but his was, you would expect that it would put the fear into the criminal's hearts. It was terrifying.
It was unique.
Unique. It's very, very, very different. You know, and the amount of detail he would put into that one character.
Yeah.
And the other thing with Bernie Wrightson is, it wasn't just the character himself. The whole scene surrounding in that panel would be dealed out to the detailed out to the nth degree. It was, he just put so much love into, so much effort into every panel that he did. I don't know how he could finish a whole comic on time. It's amazing.
And this is back before artists had digital tools to do their stuff. So I hear what you're saying. It is amazing.
Yeah, he did this by hand. You know?
That was amazing.
Yeah, he's the greatest. Really going to be missed. We lost so many, you know, in the last few years.
Yeah, I know for a while we were kind of doing, Artist of the Week. I remember it's getting kind of morbid, but it's the least we can do to remember some of our favorite artists who's entertained us over the years in such delightful ways, and I think that's...
Yeah, we're really going to miss him. Because he was still working, and he was working up until maybe a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
When his cancer just said he couldn't do it anymore. I mean, right. He worked until he was, in his late 60s.
Right.
You know, so then he was still turning out work, And it was still of really, really, really good quality.
All right, then. So we will wrap it up so Jay can get out of the door. This has been Comics News Podcast number 88. A return to discussing Iron Fist after only 1 week because it's really surprising that, it got such poor critical review and yet so many people seem to be watching it and based on Rotten Tomatoes, at least, enjoying it. And I have to say, even though I've criticized it quite a bit, I'm enjoying it more than I did a lot of the other Marvel shows, I think with the exception of Luke Cage. I would say
it has its problems, but I agree with you.
Yeah,
it has its problems, but I like it. I did not. I mean, even though I was super tired the next day, I was glad I watched it.
Yeah,
and I was happy.
Okay, so after this, I guess we gotta wait for the Defenders, huh?
Yeah, I hope that's finally good.
Yeah, well, I think Netflix has some mini promo trailers on YouTube. If you want to take a look.
I'll check it out.
But anyway, okay, so we will return to Comics News Podcast at some near future date. We've got a whole bunch of things to talk about, including Logan, which Jay had not seen as of last week, but I believe he has. So maybe next time we'll talk about Logan, a couple of other things on our plate. And there's, of course, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 is coming out in May. So we'll be looking forward to that.
Yep.
Okay, we will talk to you later.